Welcome to the PlayStation 5 Central Podcast. We give you all the news, leaks, and the...
Me.
And today I'm joined by the Stealth King, Professor of Gaming, creator of the Dan Allen Gaming YouTube channel, and the Solid Snake. It's my Nathan Drake Vikarth. How are you today?
Doing well.
And the God of Thunder, Trophy Hunter, Platinum King, Trophy Connoisseur, Jordan.
How are we going?
Why do you always laugh, man? Why do you always
laugh? I was laughing at you because I'm like, wait, is there something that usually rhymes with Trophy King?
Every time I think of Connoisseur, I just think of Dan getting connoisseurs at the movies every time. He loves his chopped up.
And then regretting it much later.
Yeah. Because he's lactose intolerant, but he doesn't admit it. He doesn't accept it. He refuses.
No, I'm not. That's
intolerant to his lactose intolerance.
That's a lie. I'm not.
So he called denial.
Not from Friday to Sunday, anyway. Now, as you guys can see, the title Far Cry 6, I was able to play 4 hours of Far Cry 6 thanks to Ubisoft or
you
Ubisoft.
Spoiled the title.
What do you call them?
I think it's
No, we called them Naughty Dog.
Sorry, what? I don't get the joke.
We call them Ubi.
Yeah, it's Ubi because it was ubiquitous software.
So what do you tell people that go,
is that
Ubi?
Real?
Yeah, I think that's what it used to stand for.
I'll call up Yves Gilmore.
So what do you tell the people that say Ubi? Because there's plenty of YouTubers and people that...
The same people. They're probably the same people who call aluminum.
And they're probably the same people who say niche for niche.
Like, learn to pronounce English.
Yeah, I'd probably say go get educated, but that's just me.
Aluminum.
So what's the proper way to say tomato, tomato? What's the proper way?
It's tomato.
Our American listeners would disagree.
Yeah, well.
What
aluminum.
Yeah, well.
Aluminum, guys.
So you're saying that the Yanks made that up?
I was looking at a video the other day. And they were talking about how we say aluminium. And they're like, yeah, they add an I in for some reason. I'm like, it's because that's how it's spelt. they were like, oh, that's so dumb. Why do they say it like that? I'm like, because that's how it's spelt.
The correct way to pronounce Ubisoft is bad video game company.
Hey.
So it's a couple of syllables.
Stop it. They are not.
Nah, I like them. They're getting better.
Name the last bad game they put out.
Assassin's Creed Valhalla.
Oh my god, I ran into that. I disagree. Name a truly bad game.
Bad game. All right.
You gotta look it up. See everybody.
Let's get started on the
look
Ubisoft.
It up because he can't think.
Well,
of
it's because I haven't played any Ubisoft games in such
a
while.
Oh, really? What about Siege?
I gotta admit, Siege, yeah, I was gonna say Siege is good.
You never played that?
Valhalla was bad. Watchdog Legions was bad.
Played Legion. You've played one out.
No, but let's be honest.
Let's be honest, Dan.
It wasn't bad because I bet you.
Ghost Recon Wildlands. Was that a good game, Dan? Was that a good game? is X Defiant going to be a good game?
I think so. I reckon that's going
to
be fun.
Is The Crew 2 a good game?
Depends if you've got good friends to play with. I've got terrible friends.
I call Legion a bad game for a 70 Metacritic.
What's this?
I mean, yeah, I get that.
70 Metacritic for what?
For Legion.
What was that other one?
Oh, no, that's not good.
I think the correct way to pronounce Ubisoft is mediocre studio. Like they're good at the 70s. They're good at the 70s,
no,
75s.
Come on.
I mean, name a game that they've done that's been better than a 75 on Metacritic.
So the Division series I really liked.
I like the Division. One and two. I have to admit, I really like the Division. Good. It's good.
Assassin's Creed, the last three I've enjoyed.
The trash, yeah.
Especially Origins, phenomenal game. Even Phoenix Rising.
I liked
that. Yeah.
I did.
I thought it was all right. I didn't like it.
Story was a bit meh, but it was a lot of fun.
And I've liked every Far Cry I've played except New Dawn.
I did not like Far Cry 4 because it was just Far Cry 3.
Far Cry 4, Pagan Min.
Pagan Min.
Yeah. That was the worst one in the series, but I still enjoyed it.
It's funny because some games I'm like, I like it if it's more or less the same. But I felt just a bit burnt out on Far Cry for some reason.
I liked,
so, I
liked Far Cry 4 more than 5.
Because
I preferred the structure of 4. because five structure was like, hey, go complete a mission. Oh, no, you've been shot out of nowhere with a poisonous dart and now you're going to get taken captive. Like, that story structure just didn't work. Not for me.
Do you remember Ghost Recon Breakpoint?
No, I don't. Flash in the pan, that was. Was
that
actually?
Yeah, that was just, that was worse than Wildlands. Yeah, that was not good. But I don't like that series very much, to be honest.
I'll tell you what, though, Dan. I do give Ubisoft a bad rap because of how much they've hurt me with Splinter Cell. But they've done well. Riders Republic is looking really good. Far Cry 6 is looking really good. Tom Clancy's The Next Siege, I mean, after Extraction. Extraction looks like a nice little side thing. Like, I'm not saying it's a side thing, but it's a nice little single player or multiplayer sort of thing. But Siege, whenever that comes out, will be really good. All that looks like, they're just going to be supporting that game for the rest of its life. The next Assassin's Creed, I don't know. I'm keen to sort of see what they do. But I'm really excited just to, I don't know, I just want to see something new from them. Like, you know, because it just keeps being these four staple franchises and they just keep building. But I want to see something new, you know? I want some new stuff.
One thing that probably makes them a bit hesitant was the most recent new franchise I can think of that was completely new was Watch Dogs. And that just hasn't caught on.
Did they shoot themselves in the foot, though, because of that amazing E3 conference and then it didn't live up to the hype that they themselves... I mean, hype, yeah, I don't know. Look,
I think you're giving them a bad rap because Phoenix Rising's new. Is Riders Republic.
I completely forgot about Phoenix Rising, yeah.
Riders Republic's good. Phoenix Rising is good. I'm just for that game, it was good for its start. Like, that's why I'm like, for that, I can't wait for the sequel because they're just going to shave off and keep all the good stuff, and it's going
to
be really good.
Is it very much like Assassin's Creed 1 to 2? You'd be hoping.
I really like the game. I think it's one of the most, like I told Dan about Ghost of Tsushima being probably the most beautiful game I've ever seen. I actually think Immortals Phoenix Rising is one of the most beautiful games as well, just the colors. Like, it's very deep, this colorful palette. But I just think it's just very, very checkboxy. There is so much stuff to collect. And like, to upgrade one skill point, you need to get so much. And they just flood the map with all these collectibles that you have to get to upgrade your character in all these different ways, which I like. It's cool, but not to that extent. Like, I liked all the upgrades because they were, like I've said to Dan and you guys a million times, I like meaningful upgrades. And those upgrades are very meaningful, but it was just so much to do just to get that upgrade. Like, so many collectibles and hunting, and they just needed to dial that back a bit. I feel like they're trying to pad for gameplay, you know?
They've got Avatar coming. That's new.
Yeah. And they've got Prince of Persia.
Prince of Persia, they're actually taking the time to fix it.
Mm.
That was supposed to come out in February.
Mm.
It's going to be a year plus. So they're probably overhauling those graphics because it looked PS3.
When did Cyberpunk come out?
December last year.
2077.
Yeah. Because you'd be hoping people...
That's when the good patch will come out.
Yeah. Oh, I like that.
No, that's when it'll come to PS5. I like the game.
Yeah.
Jack.
You would hope that people are looking at what happened with that game and being like, let's not be that. Like,
It was Cyberpunk was a very good cautionary tale for the rest of the video games industry on rushing a game out. But unfortunately, they have to meet investor deadlines. Like, you know, it's hard. Only companies like your Santa Monica's and Rockstar can really just, we're going to choose when we're going to release this. A lot of these other companies have to meet shareholder, they have to meet these deadlines, and they can't really command like a release date for these sort of things. But
well, speaking of that, I was going into Far Cry 6. I was worried about the polish and the bugs because, you know, they'd pushed all their games back. And this one, you felt like they had to keep it because they had nothing else. If they didn't sort of leave this one in that September slot, they can't really push it back because then they're competing with Battlefields, Halos. That September slot was perfect. They could probably go October, early October, but even then they're starting to push it. But in terms of polish, I only encountered one bug, just a minor little bug. But besides that, it was a pretty polished game.
That's great for alpha.
It was, well, yeah, pre-alpha, I guess it was alpha. Yeah, I guess it was an alpha. But actually, the actual game, the graphics look great, and the foliage and the greenery and the vistas. It's the best looking Far Cry game by a mile. But the cutscenes look like they're from early PS4 for some reason.
Really? Now,
is that the engine? I think it's because they're rendered in game, the cutscenes. They're not. A lot of games do that now.
Yeah.
Very few games can pull off the rendering in-game cutscenes, like,
and do it well. Yeah.
I think, I know I harp on about this game a lot, but Metal Gear Solid did it, like, because I think when you render a game in-game cutscene, it doesn't immerse you, because you still feel, you know, like a well manicured CGI cutscene can immerse you and then bring you back into the gameplay. Metal Gear Solid used in-game, and they still somehow manage to immerse you into the cutscene and then bring you back into the gameplay, even though it's like the same thing you're looking at.
Like
Ghost
like,
of Tsushima did this as well.
You played Cold War, Vike.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's got a couple of those real high quality.
Yeah, it does.
And all Call of Duties do that.
But it's even like Ghost of Tsushima, right? Some of the cutscenes are like rendered beautifully. Some of them are in-game. And the ones that are in-game look noticeably worse, don't they? And there's something you can notice and they take you a bit out of it.
You know what game had this the worst that I've ever seen? And what's that? What? Like it was a PS2 game, so you're like, you can sort of see why. But the difference between like how awesome the
I know what game you're gonna say.
Yeah, I reckon you might as well. The rendered CGI cutscenes.
Yeah, yeah.
Ones that look good compared to what the normal game looked like was so drastic, and that was God of War 1.
One. I thought you were gonna say 2.
No. Oh well. The exact same thing, because what do you call them? What do you call like the CGI cutscenes? Is that what it is?
Yeah, yeah. I guess, yeah.
Pretty much, animated CGI. Yeah.
So the high-end CGI cutscenes on that game, I honestly believe would rival like late PS3 games to some extent. Like some
to this
PS3.
Day, yeah. Yeah, they're pretty good.
Because that was so good. But then it was so jarring coming back to the in-game cutscenes and being like, man, like the detail's just not there. Just not there at all.
And if this one isn't that bad, like Far Cry 6, isn't that where it pulls you out of it? Like Ghost of Tsushima, I reckon it pulled me out of it a few times.
I think Ghost was like some were in and some weren't. That's what pulled me out. They kept switching. They didn't like just stick to one. Like they just, some of them were rendered with the meaningful parts and then the little parts weren't, like, you know.
I just think I've got a feeling that they put more time into Juan Carlos Esposito's motion capture in his facial compared to other side characters, which is fair.
I would do the same. They paid money for him.
He's the man you want to get right.
It's like when they did, I can't think of his name now, Kevin Spacey, when they did Advanced Warfare.
Democracy.
Like the mocap on him was insane. Like the way his face looked, like again, would
did you hear the exclusive story about him and Troy Baker?
I did hear that.
Oh shit,
dude! I saw this insane interview, and like they talked about like Advanced Warfare.
Alternate ending. You gotta look that up. Man.
It was crazy. Look it up.
No,
that brings me to a question actually as well.
Yeah,
you don't mind me interrupting. Far Cry from when they had Vaas was very much like. Like this is an open world exploration game, but we've also got an awesome villain, and like that villain basically would make or break the game. Is this game just resting on having Giancarlo Esposito in it? Pushing it from, obviously you've only played 4 hours, but does it seem like they're just pushing the fact that they've got him, and then like everything else comes second?
It looks like it's a balancing act. They've got a lot of side characters as well that I think they're going to rely on. If we're going off the track record of Ubisoft and Far Cry, all the villains only actually get 10, 15, 20 minutes of screen time.
That's true.
And they get a lot of radio chatter and stuff like that in between to try and so you feel like they're always there. But when you actually put the cutscenes together, there's like 3 main cutscenes. I hope that's not the case here. I hope he gets more. But the way it started, I get the feeling that could be the way it's going.
Mm-hmm.
But that would disappoint me. But again, I don't know. It's hard to say.
I've got to give Far Cry props. They do villains well. They know how to do a good villain.
That's the thing,
a memorable villain, a gripping one.
Well, Far Cry 5, Joseph Seed, the father, he had a lot of screen time compared to the others. He was
an interview I can see?
Is an interview you can see. There is. And there'll be another one too in a couple of months. But
with Giancarlo.
I would argue that, like, this might just be my opinion. I think Ubisoft thinks they do villains really well. I think they did it really well with Vaas, but then they killed him off too early. And they're like, what was the dude that you ended up fighting after? Was it Hoyt?
Hoyt. And yeah, like, Hoyt was a bit of a.
Yeah, it's like
they should have kept Vaas.
They should have kept Vaas. They did Vaas really well. like, obviously Troy Baker as Pagan Min, yeah, great voice actor, but was he that much of a compelling villain? Not really. I didn't think so.
Well, he didn't get enough to work with, I reckon.
And I agree.
And then
Joseph Seed was good.
And then Joseph Seed, I didn't really like either, because I didn't really, maybe it was because I just didn't gel with Far Cry 5 that much, and I didn't really like the story structure. But I'm like, I think they had one really good one, and then they've definitely had two villains who dominate the marketing and everything behind the game.
See, the difference with this one is it feels more serious and grounded than the others. The others feel like popcorn villains, and this one feels, he's got the popcorn element, but he's also, it just feels more visceral and serious from the cutscenes.
And he has a son.
And he's a son, yeah. Who's the son, Diego, is actually the main voice actor in Coco. Yeah, that. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so he's actually a big name as well. But I only saw the one scene that we've already seen from them.
And how's the gameplay?
Gameplay? Yeah, it's typical Far Cry stuff. Crazy weapons, crazy animal companions. It looks like a similar format. It's just that you can really go into the nitty-gritty of upgrading your weapons and attachments and things like that, and skins and all that sort of stuff. I only really played a few missions. It looks to be checkboxy again, with bases. Like, there was a couple of bases I saw with similar gameplay that you've seen before. But then again, was it ever not, like, it was always fun for me.
Yeah.
I don't know. You feel like they do have to come up with something a bit more different. But then again, that's the series. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, we're not telling Uncharted to change its gameplay.
Yeah.
And it's just a third-person shooter, isn't it?
And I think you'd be disappointed.
No, that's not a good comparison. But anyway, go, Jordan.
I was going to say, I think you'd be disappointed if you look at, like, the environments they build in Far Cry, and then it turns out it's a linear game that doesn't get you to explore or allow you to explore.
There's a lot of exploration. Right. You can just go wherever you want. Like, you don't really have to do those.
I think that's
bases.
Why the checkbox like mechanic or structure suits well for it, because it means you can go and do your own thing, and you can go and, you know, get lost and make those stories that, you know, like getting chased by, like, I remember getting chased by a honey badger
in Far Cry 3,
and then like having to retreat into a cave, and then like, all right, I'll go for a swim in this cave, and then it turns out there's like a crocodile or whatever in that cave, and you're like, oh my god. Like,
I've always found that they do side missions really well. Like, again, the side missions were more fun than the main story from what I played. I played a mission where you recruit a alligator and then use it to attack a base and, you know, tell it to attack enemies and stuff, give it a pet. And then the other one was this crazy freaking rooster. It was just silly stuff, you know, silly side missions that I also thought Valhalla did well. Bikarth disagreed.
Really?
But yeah, huge map. Oh, when I saw that map, almost to the point of overwhelmed. It was huge.
I actually liked the Valhalla side missions. I remember they were pretty good.
Yeah.
So for the map, does it seem like it's all open to start off with and you're free to move around, or does it seem like it's going to be segmented and, you know,
it's segmented by levels
and you've got to kill generals?
It's not generals. I think it's just progression through the story. But I think one of the last areas is that city that we see in the trailers and that.
It's not generals, it's El Capitans.
Yeah. So are they just locked, or can you just like give it a go, but you're going to be vastly, you're going to be killed? Like, because I like
sure.
That.
I'm not actually sure. I believe you can go there, but I'm not 100% sure. But do you know, I think there's actually water in between.
Okay.
I could be wrong, but yeah. In my playthrough, I couldn't go outside of one sort of area.
Yes. See, one thing I liked about God of War 2018 was like there were areas where it's like, well, enemies. Or even like Niflheim, like, or Muspelheim, it was like, it was just far too hard for you at that level. You needed to level up, but it gave you the freedom to give it a go. And if you did get in, you get a really big boost because you get like high level weapons. And like, I like that you have the freedom. I don't like when they try to gatekeep you. Like, make me go into the higher levels. Just make it damn near impossible for me to do it. At least give me a go.
Yeah, I don't Like, how are they going to block you off? Like, you know how Assassin's Creed puts this blue holographic thing in front? Like, I don't know how far.
Ghost of Tsushima does it, sort of, when there's like fortresses, but that's probably for the story and it just like automatically kills you. But
really?
Yeah, if you go to like a fortress, like before maybe it's necessary for the story, you try to invade the fortress and you just get killed by random arrows.
That's right. Yeah. But yeah, so there was a huge map and I was just like, we were hoping for more city than jungle because, you know, all the Far Cry games are on islands or in jungle areas. And it looks like there's, again, a lot of jungle. And you don't know how much of it's just filled with nothing because it's such a huge map. But yeah, I would have liked to go into that city a little bit more and explore through there. But the weapons are crazy. Like there's flamethrowers and crossbows. And I didn't even play with all the weapons. You know, we saw in that trailer the musical weapon, just crazy stuff like that. That's going to keep it fresh for me.
Does it seem like there's progression with the weapons? Because you know how usually like you start off and you've only really got access to like a pistol, a basic AR, and maybe a submachine gun, a shotgun, and like a basic sniper.
And a bow.
And then like by the end of the game, you know, you've got like a high-end bow. You might have a flamethrower. Does it seem like there's progression there? And obviously you're
probably... Well, I think you have to upgrade it. It's not like you pick up a golden gun.
Yeah,
you've got to upgrade it.
But just in terms of like the types of guns, does it seem there's progression in the types of guns you pick up? Or
that I'm not sure because they dropped me in like 20 hours into the game.
Okay.
And I had a lot of weapons already unlocked. So I'm not 100% sure on that one.
I like how all the weapons are wacky, like Dan was saying. Like you've got, you know, the backpack rocket thing, you've got the cassette tape gun. And like, you know, back in Far Cry 3 and 4, it was just your standard AK-47 pistol bow. There was nothing wacky. And don't get me wrong, that's part of the reason why I loved Far Cry 3, but they need to iterate and make it wacky. And I like that they go on almost this like, Just Cause sort of route in like the craziness of it and the sandbox craziness. And I think that's what it needs. Like just that refreshed gameplay, sandbox style gameplay with crazy stuff.
That has reminded me. There's going to have a bow and arrows. You know what that means?
Adaptive triggers.
Adaptive triggers out, boys.
I played it on PC, so I didn't get to feel the adaptive triggers, their full and potential. The haptic
feedback.
But I turned them off again the other day. I turned them back on and then I had to turn them back off or something.
So Vanguard?
Yeah, Vanguard. Yeah.
You can do that in the settings. There's a thing there. It says trigger effect in the settings on Vanguard. Do that next time.
Fully. So you get them fully off? No, nothing.
It turns it off. So no.
For the game.
You know, there's that trigger effect and like you have to.
Yeah,
like,
see, I don't like vibration either.
You can turn off vibration as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you can do that from there as well.
Yeah. There's a few settings. I don't know. But
yeah. I don't know. Fair play.
Make it local, not global. That's my.
Yeah. Any other questions, guys?
I guess you saw only a brief part of cutscene. You were in a fairly linear part. So did you do any free roaming or free world sort of stuff? Animals you killed, crafting?
I free roamed into a base, went the stealthy approach, and then the last guy saw me, so I had to shoot him in the head. And then I took a jet ski and there was a boat shooting at me. So I shot the boat and then fell into the water and a shark ate me.
That's the most Far Cry sentence I've ever heard.
The shark ate me. I mean, I let it eat me for the video, let's be honest. But so that's the sort of stuff you get from Far Cry. Like,
And
it's hearkening back more to Far Cry 3 than it is 5.
That's
5 was a lot of like hallucination stuff. Which a lot of people didn't like.
Far Cry 4, you had to go to like Shangri-La, and I'm like, oh my God.
And they don't, I didn't see any of that here, and I hope they take it all out because I don't want any of that. Yeah. It's such a trope.
The best mission.
I didn't mind it in three.
Yeah, I think because it's like, fresh and new.
When Citra makes you hallucinate and you've got to defeat that like neon beast, like that was cool because it was like a one-off thing. But when they kept making it a trope, I was like, this is no fun anymore.
Yeah.
And look, I'm probably shot myself in the foot. There'll probably be something with it in there, but from what I saw, there wasn't.
I guarantee you, we're gonna like halfway through the story, we're gonna meet Giancarlo. We're just about to kill him. Someone like knocks us out, and then we like wake up in the cutscene, and we're in a chair. He's there. He'll drug us, and we'll have this drug sequence, and then you know we'll start back, and then we have to like make our way every time. Every Far Cry.
I was thinking about this. How will there be a boss fight with him? How would that work? Like, is this going to be a final base, like a massive amount of enemies you got to get through? And then it's a cutscene. Do you think that's how they get away
with it? Yeah, probably.
Moff Gideon.
Because they never did a boss fight with the others either, from memory.
Vast, there was like a very linearized cutscene fight. Pagan Min, there was. Pagan Min you had to take out.
Really?
Didn't you?
But couldn't you let him go? You could let him go at the end.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
You're chatting to him in the office, and then you couldn't kill Joseph Seed, could you? Because didn't Far Cry 5 have its own separate ending? Like, wasn't it one ending, and it was... Because isn't Joseph Seed in New Dawn?
He is. That's a canon ending. There's a few endings for that.
Is there? Okay.
Yeah. There's a nuke ending.
But they never, you know, what I like about Far Cry is they never make the it's never meant to be this guy's just a bullet sponge. All these guys could just be taken out with one hit of a bullet. They're regular units, but they're just so powerful and, you know, they got so many enemies and stuff.
Do you know what I think of when you say bullet sponge now? I think of that boss fight in Avengers, Taskmaster.
I can't
get that out of my head when you think bullet sponge. It used to be Division and now it's that.
I think of the Division. Oh, there was a game.
But Division was fun. Like, I enjoyed it. Destiny, I enjoyed.
Oh, that Taskmaster boss
fight. Taskmaster was not
Avengers,
fun.
So funny. Just a complete bullet sponge.
There was a few like that in Outriders now that I think about it.
Oh, yeah. That was a culprit.
Yeah.
So what would you guys say was your favorite Far Cry? Just quickly.
Three.
I think it's conclusive that we all think three is the best.
Mm.
Yeah.
Did you ever play two?
I played...
Two was underrated.
I played two on PC. Far Cry 2.
I dabbled in two on the PlayStation 3.
Two was one of the first PS3 games I played back in 08, I reckon. 08, 09.
Yeah.
That was very underrated. Really good-looking game for the time. Yeah, no, Far Cry...
I played Far Cry 1 on the PC, and I was scared. I was very little back then. I was too scared to play it.
That was 5 years ago?
Yeah. Came out in 2008. So, 2004. I was very scared.
What about?
I don't know. It was just scary being in the jungle and like you were alone and like I was just too scared to play it.
That's funny. Yeah. So, look, you know what to expect with this series. So, that's the only thing. You can take that as a bad thing or a good thing. As I said, I've liked most of the games. So, but, you know, I've only played a 4-hour slice. So, again, we'll need a bit more time with it to really...
Has your opinion changed on the game from that 4-hour slice? Whether better opinion or worse opinion or...
No, about the same as what I was.
Okay.
Because it was what I expected. It wasn't less or more.
Anything unexpected that you didn't... Oh, you're like, oh, okay, that's actually pretty good or didn't realize it'd be like that?
The gunplay was... more refined and smoother than other That's times, good. Other games.
Isn't it the worst going from like, obviously we used to play so much COD in high school and after high school and like COD's shooting mechanics were obviously the best. Like they are the best shooting mechanics in a first person shooter. And then you go and play a different game and it just felt so bad because it wasn't COD because it was delayed and it was slow and laggy.
It wasn't as punchy and fluid.
They felt clunky.
Yeah.
Now, Dan, in Ubisoft, or when they did the Far Cry preview, they said, you know, no longer do you just have to do the game stealth. You know, you could maybe use social stealth and blend in or work your way in past checkpoints and stuff like that. Did you see any of that sort of different ways of playing the game?
There's two ways.
Stealth or loud?
Stealth or loud. From what I saw.
Fair enough.
There was no other way. But they give you a variety of weapons to keep it fresh. So, and I don't know how many of the weapons I had, like how many are left. But the ones that I use were pretty crazy and wacky and cool. They got everything. They got snipers, assault rifles, subs, shotties, special weapons. So. It's just going to be about I think for me, it's going to be the story if it hits and the actual missions, the main missions. What are you doing in these main missions? Or is it just going to a base? You know, it's got to be some variety there. It has to mix it up. And from what I've seen, it is doing that. So let's find out when it releases in a couple in a month or so, actually. Yeah, it's counting down now. And you know what else is coming out, guys? In What's 2 weeks? Deathloop. 2 weeks.
Oh, that's perfectly in time for school holidays. I remember being excited for that now, being like, I think that comes out on the Friday that school holiday starts.
Everyone I've talked to is raving about this game.
Yeah.
And they're playing it.
From some of the preview footage, not preview footage, preview coverage I've seen, people are like very happy with it.
Yeah, very happy. And they gave it like 3 weeks early to some of these press. That's very confident. You know, that's like God of War confident.
And this is a Bethesda game. And Bethesda were of the policy, like, we're not sending out early copies.
That's what I mean. And so they put this one out 3 weeks early.
They stopped sending out like that at all. So, like, that's awesome that they're that confident. I wonder what's changed. Maybe Xbox. That's actually, now that I've said that, that's probably what it is. Probably that they're with Xbox now.
They did the same for Psychonauts, which I played and was fantastic as well. They have a lot of time for that.
Because Bethesda stopped for ages from sending things out early.
It's so funny in the review world. The earlier you get the game, usually the better it is. Usually. So they obviously know when it's not going to get great. Like, they obviously get, what do you call those, mock reviews? I think a lot of these developers get mock reviewers to come in and review the game completely unbiased and
like give focus them groups.
Yeah, and give them a score so they get an idea of what they think it's going to land on.
And then, surely though, that like game devs should know that like whether
they might be clouded because they've played it so much.
True. They probably
want to see the developers
of the game too, because they're working on it so long. They're probably like, oh god, here we go.
Yeah,
I wonder how the focus groups were for Ghost Recon Breakpoint.
They didn't.
Oh man. Okay, so what's our first story, boys, for the news this week?
Into the news. So the first story, well, let's break down Gamescom. That was obviously a pretty big thing.
Did that happen before we talked last?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, first, Saints Row. Are you guys saw Saints Row?
Yeah.
I like the look of it a lot.
This was a lot of backlash, guys, over the look of it.
This is when I was shocked when I saw that people weren't liking the look of it. I was like, What was wrong with it? Oh, that looked fun.
I think it's for me. Yeah, I was surprised at how divisive it was, because everyone I know was like, we love Saints Row 2, we love Saints Row 1, and there's a lot of people that actually love Saints Row 3 as well, but they didn't like Saints Row 4. They didn't like the direction. They wanted it to go back to its roots, like the Saints Row, building your gang, and that whole GTA style not fully grounded, but somewhat grounded, where obviously like Saints Row 4 just went straight off the bloody beaten path and you started flying and jumping buildings across suburbs. But, you know, it looked like in this game, they're going back to that. They're rebooting the game, which I think was necessary. Like, I get it. There's some great characters like Kenzie and Gap. And they're going to come. They're going to be in that game.
I agree.
Johnny Gat is going to be in that game. Kenzie's going to be in that game. There's going to be a lot of them, but
why makes you say that?
I mean, Johnny Gat, Daniel Dekim, he's just too legendary. Like, no way. It's like, you know, if you reboot,
but I heard a lot of people saying it felt like that crew would smash this crew. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, this crew was soft.
Yeah, because see, that's the thing of the reboot. You could tell by the story, they're just starting out. They're just starting out. They've only got like three or four people.
That's the story, you reckon?
Yeah, they're starting out, building the gang up from scratch. You know, Saints Row 3, he was a president of the United States. So they've obviously like advanced the gang. So, you know, here they're starting out. It looks like it's a bit more grounded with still the wackiness of the weapons and that.
Yeah. Well, I saw Troy Baker tweet something about this. So he's obviously the male voice again. Yeah. Why would he randomly tweet about this game?
And he's going to...
You can tell that this game's edgy because there was someone with a light up gas mask. So you know that.
Not again. Nah,
do you know what I feel like? I feel like it's sort of overplayed. The bloody like the helmet with the LED Fortnite screen. Graphic.
I thought it was Watch Dogs when it first came up. I was with like,
the helmet.
I thought it was Fortnite.
Yeah, the Fortnite graphics, but yeah, look, I feel like it's Fortnite graphics does annoy me. Like,
It didn't look like the other Saints Rows, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, maybe that's a good thing.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a good or bad thing. I was just making the observation. It also, it didn't look like you would be swinging a dildo in that world, if you know what I mean.
Fingers crossed you're not, because like.
I think a reboot is the right direction to go. It's actually what I thought they should have done, because it just feels like that there's not much left to explore with the fourth. There's the gang.
I didn't like the last one. It was too full on.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. Like, it just feels like 2 and 3
were much better.
It just feels like, you know, this is a perfect time for a reboot, right? So
I just, and they gave away 3 as well. They gave away 3 for free. If you want to jump in, anyone.
On PlayStation or only PC?
Oh, it could be the Epic Game Store. I don't know if it's PlayStation. You can have a look.
I don't think my 2015 MacBook Air will play it.
The third Street Saints.
Yeah, so that Saints Row was there. Horizon got a release date, guys.
We did.
Can you believe this?
Who had it on their Fantasy Critic?
Me.
Ah, Jordan.
Oh, did I?
You poor thing.
Now, so this, we can tick this prediction off.
Yes.
So the prediction leaderboard, Dan is at 3, Jordan's at 0, Vikes at 0. Vike predicted November.
What did I predict November?
I predict October.
You predicted September, delayed to November. Very specific. It was sort of close. You were sort of close if you went a little bit later.
Is it February it's coming out?
February. Yeah. I said May. So who's closer? Me or
I mean,
Jordan?
we're both 3 months apart. We're all 3 months apart because I said November. Jordan said November. You said May.
What? February what? 22nd.
I said November 31st. No, we don't know.
We all get a point.
I'll give it to you because it's 2022. Like, we won the premise that will come out this year. Maybe that gives you the edge.
No worries. 4-0. No arguing there.
Oh, did we do the Ratchet Metascore, Dan? Oh, yeah, you already said winner.
Yeah.
Dan won that too.
We've got the Deathloop prediction here, by the way, which is... George says 84, Vike says 88, Dan says 83. Could be in trouble there by the sounds of the previews. February, do you think they're going to hold on this date? I reckon it gets pushed again. Don't at me. I actually think it gets pushed again here.
If it gets pushed, you have to pay everyone $1,000 on Twitter.
Isn't this day already getting crowded? I think there was 2 other games that were announced for this date. I can't remember them off the top of my head, but I think there was 2 other games announced for this date.
Yeah, Saints Row the week before. There's reboot.
It's so funny how they announced the delay. They're like, we're pleased to announce the release date. Like, you're just pushing the game back. You're trying to spin it as if we're pleased to announce the new release date, guys.
I noticed that.
Look, Dan, you could be onto something, but I think February is a good date. There's still plenty of time, 6 months. It looked like the game was mostly finished. I mean, we only got a vertical slice, but, you know, this game's been in the works for such a long time because Guerrilla haven't been on anything since Horizon, have they?
No.
Zero Dawn.
I just think they'll push it only because of the pressure when it gets to December and January and they notice, there's still a few bugs here. If we just wait a couple more months, we can get this to a 9, 10 out of 10, you know?
Yeah, Sony first party does have that polish, that polish. Sony first party titles have a level of polish that...
I don't want to be negative, Nancy.
Maybe except for Days Gone, but...
I really hope it comes out in Feb. So the Witch King DLC for Destiny comes out 4 days after. Oh, and Sifu?
Isn't it the Witch Queen?
Sifu. That was
Sifu comes out 4 days later and Saints Row a week later.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Sifu, I'm hyped.
Yeah, that looks great. It's such an interesting concept. I think that's what excites me the most about about like the aging process and everything involved in that. Just I'm really excited for that.
I'm just excited for the combat. The combat just looks so varied. Like, I'm like, how do they store all these different moves and animations? Like, how am I going to trigger? I don't know.
And did you guys watch this Gamescom show?
I did.
In its full.
Yeah. I watched most of it, not in its full.
He started it off with a real bang. The first 30 minutes really drew you in. And then after that, it just got worse and worse. The pacing completely dropped, and everyone started to not care.
This is Jeff Keighley.
But there wasn't even anything at the end. He had Death Stranding as the last thing. Why would you have Death Stranding at the end?
What else?
When it was a director's cut. We've already played it 2 years ago.
But what else would you put at the end?
Well, wouldn't you put the Call of Duty campaign at the end? Make people stick around? I mean...
Are people that interested in Call of Duty campaign, though?
Yes. How good was Cold War's campaign?
I don't know. You're probably right, Jordan.
The main reason I think Death Stranding belongs at the end because it's... How long was it? Like 9 minutes? Can you imagine how many people you'd lose if you put that in the middle?
That's your argument. Yeah, what was that ending? There was like a whale. Did anyone get that?
It looked like it was like...
Kojima? Moby Dick Studios?
Is he trying to tease Moby Dick there?
I don't know. I didn't see the whale.
At the end, it was a little whale.
In Death Stranding, there are those whales that like...
That's what I mean. Is he teasing a second game with that? I just don't know. It's so cryptic.
Who knows?
Like most times you see stuff like that, you sort of know where it's going. But with him, you just never know.
I thought it was up in the air, whatever the new story missions might be, like teasing something to do with that.
Oh, okay.
I could be 100% wrong.
Yeah. I liked the trailer. Don't get me wrong. And I like that Hideo cuts the trailer. I think he cut it himself.
He is good at making them. Don't forget. Just ask him.
He did a really funny tweet the other day as well. I've got to find it. Oh man, this guy's gold on Twitter.
Marvel Midnight Suns, did we see that one?
And that looks fun.
What's the gameplay? What is it?
So from memory, it's meant to be like a XCOM.
Well, they asked them that and they said it's gonna be like XCOM, and they said, well, it's gonna be a tactical RPG. So
the company that's making it are the developers. It's Fireaxis, so they're the developers of XCOM.
Yeah, but he didn't say like you would expect them that if it was going to be like exactly like XCOM, that they'd come out and be like, yeah, it's going to be like that. But he sort of like shot it down a little bit and said, oh, you know, well, it will be a tactical RPG, and we're excited to like show you more later.
What I liked was that the main character is completely original. They worked with Marvel. I'm like, that's pretty cool, and the cast looks cool because they got. You got like Ghost Rider and Blade and Wolverine. It's like these are characters that they're obviously part of Marvel, but they're non-MCU. Like I haven't seen Ghost Rider in the current MCU. You haven't seen Blade. Obviously, they're old Marvel movies, but it's like cool. Just not. I don't want to see like Captain America, Iron Man, Thor, Black Widow. You know, like just the same old again and again and again in every Marvel property. It's like it's cool that they've really gone this different route, and I like it.
Sorry, can I? This is Hideo's tweet. Final trailer. It may sound strange, but in addition to let people know about DS, play with it and like it more, I'm hoping it will be an opportunity to create a video work. I also wanted people to be exposed to music that they don't usually listen to. I didn't make this for publicity. I might get accused by saying this though. It's lost in translation a little bit.
Yeah, but I say clearly Google Translate done a number on that one, but
doesn't he have his English translator doing that Twitter for him?
I don't know.
You know that woman vibe?
Donna Burke. No, she's a singer.
No, he has an assistant.
Oh, okay.
Do you know her?
No.
You don't know. Anyway. What else was at Gamescom? Anything else?
Yes. Well, we had obviously a lot of Jeff Keighley hyping things up.
Lego Star Wars. Star Wars. 2022.
Looks good. You know what I realized? I thought this would just be a remaster of all the other Lego Star Wars. Because I played the Lego Star Wars Complete Saga, which is episode 1 to 6. I thought it was just going to be a remake of that, like up-res, but then you're going to add episodes 7, 8, and 9. But it's all completely different. There's voice acting, cutscenes, and it looks like they've actually changed the Lego formula. It's more over the shoulder now rather than top down. There's shooting segments and lightsaber battle segments. There's more action and third person shooting than just top down, press square, build stuff. And that's really intrigued me. It's still going to be your classic Lego collectathon, but I'm really impressed by the gameplay, the cutscenes, the amount of effort they're putting into it.
This is the ultimate kids game.
I'm really excited. I'm actually really excited for this. So.
There's so much content.
Yeah, a lot of content.
Nine movies worth.
Mm.
Like, that's insane, man. Think about it. They sold the first three as one game, second three is, you know what I mean? And now they're saying all nine in one.
Mm. And it seems like it's different, which is amazing. Think about, like, I'm thinking about already, like, how cool some of these fights are going to be. Like, from The Last Jedi, the fight in the throne room. Like, that's going to be awesome. Like, that's going to be great. Yeah. Like, yeah, that looks great.
I like episode three, the fight.
With Grievous?
Obi-Wan and...
It's over, Anakin.
Anakin, yeah.
I like that fight in general. I actually like that fight in general.
It's been memes to oblivion, but it was a great fight.
It was a great fight. Come on.
What's the best Star Wars fight, Drakken? I think it's got to be episode 3. Darth Maul was good. Just the elevator.
Oh, man.
Darth Maul and the music. The music's so iconic for me.
And he just pulls out the double blade. What's it called?
Duel of Fates.
Yeah.
That's the best song. I think that's my favorite.
Yeah, you know the funniest thing? Some of the best fight scenes are actually on the Clone Wars and Rebels. Like,
yeah, but everything else is bad.
No.
That's a problem.
You can't say that about Clone Wars.
Well, hold on. What are you talking about? The animated?
Yeah, Clone Wars.
Oh, I thought you were talking about episode 2. Sorry.
No, everything about that movie is bad.
Yeah, no, Clone Wars. Yeah.
What was good in episode 2? Oh, yeah, the Geonosis fight when Mace Windu took off Jango's head.
Yeah, anyway, we're not a Star Wars podcast. Let's keep
going. I like Samuel L. Jackson. I want him back.
Is it true that he's like, I'm not going to have a green lightsaber, I'm going to get a purple, my own?
Yeah.
He said to George Lucas, I can't see myself in this movie. And George said, I'll make you stand out by giving you a purple saber. And then now it's like full lore. It's like so full lore. It's so stupid. In the lore, it's like because he's a unique force wielder and all this sort of stuff. Like he's one of the few Jedi that wields the dark side.
Movie he was in?
No, he died in episode 3.
Oh, okay.
But Samuel Jackson himself recently tweeted, Mace Windu is not dead. He could survive that fall. Like, he wants to be back.
Well, yeah, Darth Maul survived and he got his head taken off, didn't he?
He got cut in half. Yeah. He got cut in half
and he survived. Like,
I want Mace Windu. I want him back.
You know who I want back?
Yeah.
He's been waiting 10 minutes. He's been waiting 10 minutes to say that. Like,
little Labrador puffy dog. Try not to go nuts.
Go, Jordan. Who do you want back?
Episode 10, get me back.
Watto and Jar Jar, they formed the Sith, the new Empire.
So there was also that Call of Duty gameplay thoughts, Vanguard gameplay.
We'll save it for when we say what we've been playing, because we played the Vanguard Alpha.
I'll be honest about the... Oh, we'll wait until...
Yeah, I think, because I've got a bit to say.
Yeah.
Okay, PS Plus games?
Oh, sorry, before we go to the PS Plus games, one thing I want to mention about the Gamescom Awards... Did you guys find it so ridiculous that there were these things called Gamescom Awards and games like the best game, most anticipated, like best RPG, and it was like going to Elden Ring and like these games haven't even came out.
It was the dumbest thing I've ever seen.
It was like, oh, the best shooter, Halo Infinite. I'm like, how can you be giving awards to games that have not even come out? It was the most stupidest thing I've ever seen in my life. Like, absolute ridiculous. They're giving awards to Elden Ring, Halo Infinite, all these games that haven't even come out, no one's even played. Like,
what's that for, you think?
Have we seen a single Elden
deal or something?
I don't know.
I thought it was like at E3 people go and like see the things and they have like game of the show awards they give out.
Yeah, but Elden Ring wasn't at the show. And it wasn't like a most anticipated award. It was like best RPG.
They did show gameplay, right? Behind closed doors.
Yeah, but the publics that's voting haven't seen that gameplay. Do you know what I mean?
Well, are the public voting for those? I don't know. Anyway, it was dumb.
Because I thought it was silly.
Game of the year was Elden Ring. It's out next year. So it doesn't quite make sense.
A single minute of gameplay and I've called it Game of the Year.
It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't.
I mean, it's good to have the game up.
It's classic Jeff. PS Plus games. Look, according to the rumor, I think it's pretty much well confirmed, but it is technically rumor at this stage. But, you know, most of these leaks have come out pretty much bang on.
It's confirmed from one of my sources. Yeah.
So is it Hideo, one of your sources?
Yeah.
So it looks like we're going to get Overcooked, All You Can Eat, and we're going to get Hitman 2 and Predator Hunting Grounds. So I think it's not a bad not a bad lineup. Overcooked is a great game.
The Overcooked play is interesting because that includes all the DLCs. So do they? How do they make more revenue? Is there another DLC coming?
But isn't that 1 and 2 as well?
Yeah, and got DLCs in it.
That's a great package for a free game because I know a lot of casual PlayStation players or people who play with their girlfriends who like love Overcooked. And Overcooked it's just perfect 3 package.
Is coming. I've got it. That's why.
The scoop. And yeah, I think that is very, very insane value to get both Overcooked and all the DLC. That's really good value.
Good game.
Yeah, and it's a great game. A lot of fun.
Very fun.
Hitman 2. What I was telling Dan about this was, obviously, people have Hitman 3. You could potentially play Hitman 1 and 2, but you had to buy it. But you could play it on the Hitman 3 with the up-res graphics and all the loading and all that sort of stuff. But I wonder if...
You had to buy the maps or something, yeah.
Yeah, you had to buy the game, but you can play it on the Hitman 3 software. So I wonder if we can get Hitman 2 for free and then go to Hitman 3 if you own it and say, hey, I've got Hitman 2 downloaded, so can I get a free
I would say upgrade? You can.
Yeah, because I'm keen to do that. I really am. Because Hitman 2, I played the first two. I just never got around to it. And I think it's the best Hitman. Like, I've only played 2 levels and I know it's the best Hitman. That Formula One mission was like just insane. It was phenomenal. Like, I love that mission.
Such a good mission.
I'm interested to potentially play it as well because Hitman 3 didn't really vibe with me. So I'm wondering if you reckon it's better.
Yeah, Hitman 3. How,
Jordan? It's such a good game.
Hitman 3 was good.
I was really bored when I played it. I just couldn't. I was just like, I don't know. Yeah. Those games just aren't for me. Maybe that's the thing. I just might not be a stealth player because I was just really bored.
That's fair enough.
You beat it though?
Yeah, I beat Hitman 1 and 3.
Were you bored?
The older Hitmans. Nah. I like it. I love
You're the stealth king.
Yeah, that's why I love it. Played it Silent Assassin.
In Predator Hunting Grounds, they're probably trying to. Like, if you were playing that now, you'd struggle to find a game. You wouldn't find a game in Australia.
I wouldn't think so, no. Because they have a ridiculous trophy list. You know how we're talking about, like, ridiculous the other day? Kill 1,000 Marines as the Predator. Kill the Predator, like, 1,000 times. Like, guys, come on.
Do you reckon they did it so people had to play longer?
Oh, if they did, it worked the other way because people just aren't playing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Now Death Stranding, we talked about it earlier, but there could be a sequel in the works.
Yeah, Norman Reedus, apparently, IGN Brazil. There was a scribe from Adora Cinemas at Source, and they just said Reedus was thrilled at the prospect. He said, I think we're doing a second Death Stranding. And he said, the game is in negotiations with Sony, in negotiations right now. Not much to go off. And I think, judging by what you guys said, story-wise, there probably isn't much room. But I think it sort of makes sense. Like Death Stranding, I don't know if it makes sense because it didn't sell amazingly well. It's very niche.
Well, we didn't think it sold well, but then we heard it did 5 million, which is pretty good.
I heard that today. That's actually very good sales, especially
that's
for
a game really like good that. For their budget. That's really good for what the budget they had. So.
Think about what the game is. Like, it's a delivery simulator. Like,
and they're probably to cut you off. They're probably also expecting more sales from this director's cut as well. You know, so it's going to end up being 6 or 7 mil by the end, you'd think, which is very good.
Norman Reedus and his Norman Fetus.
Like, Returnal hasn't even hit a mil from what we know.
I mean, I feel like, we haven't gotten any sales data on Returnal actually. Yeah. I feel like it's
that game died off, man, very quick.
Game. It's still my game of the year.
No one talked about it ever again.
Because it's not like it's not like it's an ongoing multiplayer persistent. Like, you know, it's just once you finish the campaign, there's not much else to do.
It was the same for Resident Evil. That's dropped off as well.
Yeah. No one's talking about Lady D anymore.
It really has been a slow year for games, hasn't it?
Yeah. Returnal's still my game of the year, I'd say.
Yeah, same.
There is another game.
Do you reckon it'll hold?
Well, I'm not sure because Dan Allen Gaming won't play It Takes Two with me. So I can't make a full opinion.
It's this weekend, man. Sunday. Are you free?
Yeah. I put it in the calendar last time. And what happened?
Let's do it. Did you?
I put it in our calendar.
Oh, no. I didn't see that.
Put a calendar invite.
Put it in this time. Yeah.
Thank you.
I think because Vanguard was out. So yeah, Death Stranding 2. Me and Jordan are happy about it if it happens. Vikarth hasn't played the game because he's not a real Kojima fan.
I am.
Talking off air, he's actually a Metal Gear fanboy, not a Kojima fan.
I like Kojima. Sad day. I like Kojima.
Okay, what other game have you played of his besides
Metal Gear? I like Kojima, but I love Metal Gear. I played Metal Gear Solid 1. I've played Metal Gear Solid 2. I've played Metal Gear Solid 3.
Did you play Metal Gear Solid Survive?
Did you play
Metal I didn't play Gear that trash.
On the PSP?
No, I didn't play the Acid games. I did see the story to those. It's not technically canon, but it's...
Is there a game that completely rips off MGS?
Nah, it's too unique, I'd say. I mean, you could argue that. No, not really. No.
Not a single game.
It's just too unique. Like, I guess there's similar stuff in stealth when you think about, like, the older Splinter Cells and Metal Gear, but I wouldn't call them rip-offs at all. They're just stealth games.
Yeah. So what was this? Norman Reedus, Let It Slip.
Yeah, and he's Norman Fetus.
PS5, the Teardown. What's this for?
So the this has been making the rounds. A lot of people have, I guess,
hyperbole.
Hyperbolically, sort of, you know, because you know how we had that story last week how the PS5 has undergone a new revision, right? And we said there's a new thumb screw. Yeah, and we said there's a new thumb screw and sort of stuff. Now, if you know Austin Evans, YouTuber. Big tech YouTuber, he got his hand on the new PS5 and he opened it up and did a video on him tearing it down. And he did a few like sort of measurements and used a bit of equipment to just do a bit of a rudimentary assessment of the performance of the console. And this is obviously hyperbolized and he hyperbolizes himself. He said in the video, it's not as bad as you think, but technically it is worse because, and the reason he says this is because remember how we said that the console was 300 grams lighter? Remember that, Dan? How we said it's slightly lighter, the new consoles? It's like half a kilo or 300 grams lighter.
Yeah.
So the reason why it's 300 grams lighter is because all that 300 grams was taken out of the heat sink. So they've taken the heat.
So it could technically get a little bit hotter now.
Well, he measured it, Austin Rivers. Austin Rivers, that is
Austin
name.
Rivers.
Austin Evans.
Wow.
Who's Austin Rivers? Oh, basketball. Austin Rivers. Yeah.
Doc Rivers' son.
Yeah, that's right.
Austin Rivers.
Wow. Sorry, I got my things mixed up there.
Austin Creed, Jordan.
Yeah, that's what I thought he was going to say next.
So he...
Stone Cold?
Basically, Stone Cold. The PS5 is not stone cold, this new revision, because he measured it with his thermal camera and he found it ran about 3 to 5 degrees hotter. So not a huge thing.
That doesn't mean anything.
I know. But people are like, this is worse. This is hotter.
The PS3 and 4, you could cook a fucking egg on it.
And that's why people are worried, because they're like, look, we've had heat problems in the past. Why are you guys making it? Why are you guys going back to that? Why are you guys making it harder for yourselves? Now, my understanding of this and my theory. Now, the other theory is, the heat's dissipating, so his thermal camera, you know, picked up it's dissipating heat better. But I just think because there's less... Bloody Siri. Freaking I just think Siri. That because... I think that because they took out the heatsink, it's obviously objectively going to be hotter. So that's where they've reduced the console weight, because the heatsink's out. Now, the reason for this probably is because... when you make your first iteration of a console, you're going to over-engineer it. You're going to overdo everything just to make sure you don't have any problems with it, to make sure that, you know, PS5 has had, obviously, the PlayStation in the past have had problems with cooling, so they didn't want to have that again. So they made sure this heatsink was over the top. They made sure it, like, overworked and over-designed, over-engineered, so that it definitely didn't have any problems. And now that they've had a year of PS5 data being sent through, you know, they have all our data with the console performance and all of that sort of stuff. So they know what the PS5s are running at. They've had a year of data to look through. They're probably saying, hey, look, heat is not a huge problem. How are we going to save money on the new consoles? Because we also heard that they're starting to make money on the PS5s now. We knew the PS5s initially were sold at a loss to them. Now they're making money on it, probably for this sort of stuff. When they dial back on the raw materials, you know, especially for economies of scale and mass production sort of parts, when even, you know, a slight incremental minute saving on a part has huge implications on the bottom line at the end, right? So taking out, you know, a lot of parts for the heatsink, they changed, I think aluminium. They've changed from copper to aluminium in a certain area, I think, with the heat sink. That's not verified, but it looked like that. So that's my thinking. They obviously just look like, said, heat's not a huge problem. We can save a bit more money with the future console. So let's just reduce the heat sink. We don't need it to be over-engineered as bad. And now they're starting to make money on these consoles. So it just looks like a bit of a, just a standard move for a lot of these products. When they, you know, make a second revision of a product, they realize we probably don't need this stuff. We can save money on this and dial it back. So I think if Sony saw that, they wouldn't risk this, because having consoles overheating would be a very, very big problem. And they would never go near that. That'd cost them more money for people and warranty and people fixing it. So I think Sony has made this with a decent conscience. And yeah, they're just trying to save a bit more money, which I think is fair enough.
Yeah. And I don't think it'll be it might not be a problem yet, because if you think back to our PlayStation 4s and our Pros when we first got them, they never really ran that hot. Maybe the Pros did, but the original PS4 never ran that hot. It wasn't until it got later in the gen, when they got older and the games required a little bit more of the PlayStation, that it did get hotter and did start to sound like it was about to launch out of your entertainment unit. So maybe once, you know, it's not a problem immediately, but once, you know, PlayStation 5s do get to be a little bit more ambitious than they already are, and your PlayStation just has natural, you know, degradation, I guess, from being used, maybe it might be more of a problem then. But right now, it's like barely worth mentioning, I think.
Yeah, there's no evidence here to suggest that you're going to have heating problems. So it's just obviously people saw the data on the teardown of the video and a lot of people were concerned, I guess.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's probably the big thing doing the rounds. And I would say it's not as big as a problem as people would think. But like Jordan said, we're going to have to wait and see in the future when you've got games like God of War and Horizon maybe, and later games in the later year, when it's going to really draw out the power and the performance of the PlayStation 5. The other thing that did change was the fan as well. The design of the fan did change. And I think the new PlayStation 5 technically runs a bit quieter, and part of that could be the fan, but there was a bit there, but yeah, that's the general gist. Not a huge thing, but
yep.
Gamescom attracts 13 million.
Yep.
Now, got a Game Awards. I want to say it was over 100 million. So there's a difference there. It was like 80 million plus, I remember. Now, for these stats, 30 million, can you tell me, does streamers restreaming count in that figure?
Probably not, you know. I don't think it would. But
because someone like Dr. Disrespect, he would have had half a mil tune in. And does that account for the 13 mil?
Maybe.
And the Game Awards last year was 83 mil.
83, there you go.
There's no, I don't even think I watched it. Like, was there a Gamescom channel that was like you could watch it on? Because I think I watched it on the IGN channel.
It looks like the 13 million were Gamescom's live streams. So it's only Gamescom live streams.
Yeah.
Now, what's interesting is last year's opening night live was 5.8 million. So 30% increase to the year on year, which is pretty good.
And if you look at, obviously not the same show, but looking at the Game Awards, this is just from the viewership as well. Just talking about the rises, Vike. 2018 Game Awards views, 26.2 million. 2019, 45.2 million.
Yeah, he just doubles it every year. It's crazy. Yeah. But this Gamescom, I think it includes others, Vike, because the official Gamescom on YouTube only has 90,000, but IGN has 1.1 mil. So there would be definitely including IGN.
Okay, then yeah.
It just shows that, like, because it's growing, it looks like, you know, the digital events are here to stay. You know, the digital E3, even though that's dead, the digital Gamescom and digital, you know, whatever, whenever they do a PSX.
When are we going to start talking about E3 next year? Is it going to be in person? I think it'll be digital again.
I think it's just, you know what? I feel like if they see that, hey, like it's probably doing well digitally, they probably might as well keep it, because it's like we don't need the overhead of hiring out a big hall, hiring out all these booths, hiring all these physical equipment, when they can just have everyone, hey, send in your direct conferences, send in your pre-made videos, which you guys have tailored. And there's not going to be any E3 cringe moments because they've obviously like they can edit in the videos and put their best foot forward. But that being said, I think a big part of E3 was like the show floor and you can try out the games and that sort of stuff. So, and it is like a trade show in that way. So look, I don't know what they'll do. I feel like it's dead, but we'll see what happens. You know, I think either way, whether they do a live show on or digital, it'll do well, I think. So,
Jordan?
I think this is the first Gamescom I've ever watched. I think normally I don't even really pay that much attention to it.
Why was that? What was the main reason behind that?
I was home the morning of. I wasn't at work because we're working from home at the moment. And it seemed like it was just a bit of a bigger deal. Obviously, being on this podcast, I was like, oh, well, I'll watch it so I know what's going on. Which reminds me, I can't believe we didn't talk about TMNT Shredder's Revenge earlier, because yeah, that looks cool from Gamescom. Yeah, I don't know. I just think I was a bit more attuned to it. I knew that it was happening. I don't normally pay attention to Gamescom that much. Is there normally a big digital like conference like there was? Like in a normal year?
Yeah, there was one last year. Remember that was the one where he's like, Fall Guys, season two, next.
Okay, but that was in a pandemic as well. So what about 2019? Was there a big like digital showcase?
Yeah, because Gamescom's traditionally in Germany. So it has a big presence in Germany, like Tokyo Game Show, obviously in Tokyo, and E3, obviously in LA, I guess. So that big presence.
Yeah, they're the three big ones.
I knew that like people went there. I just didn't know whether they had like conferences
like
happened last week.
I think back in the day, like E3 just apps was a Super Bowl. It literally was a Super Bowl. So like that just dominated. And like you'd save nothing for other conferences. It just was, you know, at Gamescom, you'll see more of what E3, more of what they showed at E3, you know, like that's why. But now with, I don't know, the way the industry is and, it, you know, there's not much, E3 is not the Super Bowl anymore. So people are...
What is the Super Bowl?
It's just more spread, you know, it's a bit more spread out. People are
revealing
things.
Is the Super Bowl the Game Awards now?
I think Keighley wants it to be that. And I kind of like that he's going for that. He wants that because I think it's a great idea, but we'll see. I don't know.
Because he also did the Summer Games Fest, which had Elden Ring. So he's going to end up doing three shows this year, and they were all pretty decent.
He's going to do like E3 big, next.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I really enjoyed the show too. Like I did skip through some parts, but it wasn't because like I was bored, except for maybe one part. It was more that like, oh, that game doesn't speak to me, so I'm not going to watch it. But I'm like, I'm sure it speaks to someone.
Yeah, look, I was bored halfway through the Gamescom. It started to really wane. Some of the games that they were showing, like it was games like what's that one on PlayStation? Is it Chorus? Like it looks cool in that, but it's just, I don't know. Games like that were being shown, TMNT, and then this sort of Japanese top-down game. It was just one after the other where it was like, oh yeah, oh yeah, yeah. At the end of the day, he's not really controlling those announcements. He's asking developers to come on. That's what you've got to understand.
Yeah.
He's a facilitator.
Maneuver it to make it into a good show.
Usually a good year is sort of just good timing, isn't it? Really?
Yeah. Think about that that amazing PlayStation conference where they showed four games and it was like The Last of Us, God of War, Spider-Man and Horizon, maybe?
Ghost.
Yeah. Think about
that. That was such a pretentious conference.
Like, think about the timing on it, though.
Yeah, like, it was good. But they just made people wait like 20 minutes so they could do their little Last of Us in a rotunda. Oh, my gosh.
That was weird. That was very weird.
And then they had, what's his name? Sean McAuliffe? No.
I'm glad you're here.
So are they gonna rename McCree from Overwatch? That's confirmed.
Oh, yeah. Going on to that. Yes. Yeah, so
he is now known as Male Cowboy Hero, isn't he? For the
time. I don't know what he's going to be.
He is not.
No,
I hope you're joking.
No, that's just for while they come up with a new name for him. That's what he's going as.
It's because
no, I don't believe you.
Obviously, this is obviously amid all the sexual assault allegations. So
call him Clint. Clint Eastwood.
Clint Eastwood. Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Get off my lawn.
Yeah.
But then for the
future, he'll be known as the cowboy hero until they come up with a name for him.
Yeah. So obviously people are a bit annoyed about this because they're like, well, you know, why change it to McCree and, or why change his name? Like, just let it be. And I think one thing we've got to remember is they're not renaming him because his name happened to be the same name as Jesse McCree, the developer. It was specifically named after him. So after the employee, you know, so if it was named just and happened to be the same, then yeah, of course, there's no reason to change it. It's just happenstance. But because they named him after him directly and they don't want his legacy, they want what he represents, you know, as part of the game, and they don't want that legacy to be attached to that, they're going to change it. But it kind of sucks because I feel like I'm always going to know him as McCree. He was my main in Overwatch. He was my favorite. I mained him. I loved him. And I just feel like, what am I going to call him? Like,
so they're not changing the character at all, just the name.
It looks like they're just going to change the name.
Hmm.
But
okay.
What was the name of I can't get the name in my head. The cowboy from Mortal Kombat. Aaron Black.
Aaron Black.
I changed it to Aaron Black.
Aaron Black. Voiced by Troy Baker. He strikes.
You know who also was voiced by Troy Baker?
Every other character.
I can't even think of his name now either. Oh my gosh. The dude from Death Stranding and the villain.
Higgs.
Yeah, that's right.
Riggs. Naughty Dog.
Yeah. This one.
Working on Crunch.
Yeah, it was just interesting. I thought I'd put it in here because there was a Game Informer interview that they did with Evan Wells and Neil Druckmann, who are the co-founders, or I should say co-presidents of Naughty Dog. And they were just talking about Crunch. And Evan said, or Wells said something pretty interesting. He said, I've definitely personally worked very hard over the years. I think some of that has helped me get to where I am in my career. So this is when he was talking about his own personal experience with Crunch. Neil Druckmann sort of mentioned that, or Wells continued on to say, you know, we do want to strike the right balance between giving people the opportunity to leave their mark on the industry and advance their craft in ways that have never been achieved, but also finding the space along that spectrum. And, you know, Neil Druckmann also sort of put forward a similar argument or similar viewpoint, basically saying, Neil said basically the point was making sure that everybody is able to work as hard or as little as they want. We want to create an environment that allows that. That's what Wells said that Neil sort of agreed with, or that was Neil's point. So basically, you know, if we had some sort of restriction where when the clock strikes 40 hours, a server shut down and you can't work anymore, that would frustrate people to no end. There are people who really want to put in that extra polish on their own volition. They would feel handcuffed. So that's why we feel like we need multiple solutions. You know, we need approaches from multiple angles. You know, if you try one solution, you're always leaving other solutions behind. So it's a bit harder.
I was thinking about this, as sad as it is. When you're at that high quality of Naughty Dog, Rockstar, I believe Crunch might be unavoidable, unfortunately. And now I'm not saying that from an ignorant place. I know developers and people that do this, and they actually want to put in those extra hours. They want to do that, a lot of them. Some of them don't, of course. There's always varied. But a lot of them are so passionate about it as well, and they're getting financial rewards for it as well.
Yeah, paid overtime.
Overtime.
That sort of stuff. Incentives or rewards for good performance and bonuses.
Yep.
Yeah.
And these guys are making well above the average salary in America. Well above. Yeah. Triple.
If people want to work overtime, I think why not let them? I think there should be a conversation. They should be monitored and cared for and make sure that they're not overworking themselves and their health is right. But I still think, like, you know, when you work as a creative, and I'm definitely not a creative, I think creatives, they just love to dive in. You know, they love to dive in and just spend hours and hours on their creation. And I think that's just the nature of creative work. But you know, you just
for a lot of people, not everyone.
Yeah, not everyone. And I think you should facilitate that environment. People want to just clock in 9 to 5 and leave. That should be fine. If people want to put in more, you should. And, you know, it's funny because Amy Hennig, when she was making Uncharted 3, I think she said, no, not even when she was working Uncharted 3, she said for the entire decade she worked at Naughty Dog, she worked 12-hour days, 7 days a week. And Druckmann said himself, yeah. So Yeah, I just, and Druckmann himself said Uncharted 4's central theme of passion versus settling down was inspired by Crunch, where like Drake was so obsessed, you know, with finding the treasure and he had to settle down with Elena. Like that was 12 what hour inspired
days, him. 7 days a week.
I know, man. It's crazy. It's crazy.
That's insane. I do like what Neil's saying though, that like let people work as little as long as like, but obviously you're not working to the extent that it's hurting your well-being or the job that you're doing.
Yeah.
But also like work as little as you want to make, but as long as you're still hitting those deadlines, getting what you need done to that certain quality. Like
I just think like that's what they would like. That's the ideal world. But I think in reality, and we've seen this with Cyberpunk, you know, crunch has been such a big problem or big issue, I should say, in the games industry, where a lot of people might not have that opportunity or deadlines need to be met. If a deadline needs to be met and you're responsible, your team's responsible, you even if you're because technically
money's involved.
Yeah. You know? I mean, yeah. Even if you're allowed to leave at 5, you know you can't. You know you're handcuffed and you need to meet that deadline. You know, there's not going to be a deadline that's due tomorrow and you're going to be like, oh, I've got to go. You know, works. It's 5 o'clock. I've got to leave. And even though you're allowed to, and there's probably no financial penalty or you have to, you're handcuffed. And that's probably
Naughty Dog didn't crunch, I reckon we still wouldn't have played The Last of Us Part 2.
I think every game at this stage is crunched. And a lot of companies want to avoid crunch, but that means that you're going to have inflated game dev cycles and people don't want that.
What was the game that said they eliminated? Was it Spider-Man?
I'm trying to think of what game it was.
Was it Insomniac, Miles Morales?
Was it Ratchet?
Ratchet. Yeah, it was Ratchet.
Yeah.
It was Ratchet. They were going on about how there was no crunch for that.
Yeah. Do you know what I realized about Ratchet? It's a scam.
The portals are a scam.
I wouldn't say scam, but I think we all saw it. I remember when we first started playing it. Mentioned that.
We got duped. We got duped.
We got riffed off.
We got marketed to.
Yeah.
The marketing team.
And we talked about this when it first came out. We said the riffs aren't as game-changing as we thought.
Yeah.
Plus, the sequences are heavily linearized, so it's not like you're jumping into random worlds. Mm. They know the world you're going to jump into.
Say, like, I hope that it's not just grapple points, and then it turned out that a lot of the things were just grapple. Yeah.
I saw a really interesting video about a guy was claiming he reckons that game could have been on PS3.
Yeah, that was the
did
dude.
Did you see that video?
It's that medium.
Developed from TT Games. Who did the Lego games.
Do you agree with him? I can't say with any.
I can't sort of disagree. I don't know about PS3. That might be hyperbolic. Or maybe it can run on the PS3 with like, you know, 10p.
I can't agree with him because we're not developers.
I think he
was like a developer. He was a lead developer at Telltale, wasn't he, for like years? So he knows.
No, not Telltale, Traveller's Tales.
He was a lead developer.
That game could not run on a PS3. I think what he was trying to say is that mechanic.
That mechanic, yeah. Like that's not, you probably saw that mechanic in PS3. Like it's not.
Well,
he showed an example
from Lego Star Wars, and it was a thing from Episode 3.
I see what you're saying, George. Yeah.
So he was saying that like it sort of got blown out of proportion because he was saying like it's still impressive.
He still loves the game. He got a bit of hate for it.
SSD does wonders for it, but it's not as revolutionary as
they were making it
out to be. And we called that out for it as well because we were like, yeah, like the riffs are cool and like it's cool how quickly. But if you look carefully enough, you can also see when like a cutscene happens as you go into the rift and out of it.
Mm.
It's like a noticeable jump. And it's like, okay, I've lost control of this part because they're taking control to get me through.
I was very disappointed when you weren't playing in that sequence.
Yeah, and it was on rails.
You weren't moving.
It was on rails.
It was just heavily linearized. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the real testament would have been if you could choose like different realms or dimensions and you could jump. That would be instant loading. That would be insane. Mm. But everything
I was under
was
the impression
pre-loaded.
That could be in raw gameplay, like uncut gameplay. You could transfer to worlds.
Mm. Yeah.
That's what I thought.
Initially. But how could you do that in a free environment? Like, it'd be so hard to monitor that. Like, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It sounded too good to be true.
Maybe we'll see that down the line. You know?
Oh,
maybe,
yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah. One day.
But I still think it's a great game. Really loved that game.
It definitely will be one day. Think about how quickly the environments load in Miles when you fast travel. Like, think about how quickly those environments load in when you're like.
Especially with that technique that you were saying for Horizon, where they don't show what's behind you, they don't render it in. you know, that technique where they only show what's in your peripheral vision.
In your cone of vision. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good technique. It's a good technique. Yeah, so I think with the crunch, you know, there's just Naughty Dog giving an interesting insight. I thought it was good to mention because of how prevalent crunch is and how much of a big issue it is in the games industry, particularly in the games industry. Games industry is almost got the defiance crunch, you know.
It's got the worst out of a lot.
Yeah, I'd industries. Say that. Yeah.
I feel like it's here in the games industry. It's called crunch. Everywhere else, it's called overtime.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Yeah.
If you work in the sports industry, that's all you ever do, overtime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Trust me, I've done it. That's all you ever do. And I was in golf. Imagine actually popular sports. like football or, you know, NFL or whatever, like the crunch that those guys would do, it'd be crazy. Because you gotta work weekends and stuff when the games are on, or gotta travel, you know. You don't take into that account all that stuff. Last story, Vark?
Oh, I've got a couple more. So the last next
story,
one...
Vark? No.
obviously, there was just a really interesting article in gamesindustry.biz about cloud gaming. So Newzoo, who are basically a games market data research company, analyst company, they're pretty big from memory. So they were just talking about cloud gaming forecasted to generate $6.5 billion in 2024. And they said an estimated 60.7 million, so just under 61 million paid users, they predict will be using cloud services. They've just said, look, it's been an upward trend since 2018. It's been growing with COVID, you know. It's going to be difficult for consumers to get hardware. So the streaming and cloud gaming.
I've got to cut you off. I've got to call this guy out. Jaw Raptor, right? He's a YouTuber. He does Assassin's Creed stuff, right? Good videos. He's got about 600,000, 700,000 followers. He's on vacation. He's surrounded by beautiful vistas in a foreign country. He's got a pool there. He's got drinks. He's beautiful view. What's he doing? The photo's him with his fucking controller playing Assassin's Creed on his phone, connecting home. I'm thinking, please enjoy your holiday, man. You played 1,000 hours of this game. Let it go and enjoy your holiday. For the love of God.
Like, seriously. Mate, it's a beauty of cloud gaming. It's coming.
Well, that's why I think it's not all what it cranks up to be.
Yeah.
Because you want a game in your environment. Do you really want a game outside your normal environment?
I think this is more for when people can't get huge hardware and big consoles. Like, cloud gaming can facilitate that. Like Stadia, for instance, you know.
It's been a raging success.
What's the last six? Have they cancelled that? Can you buy one?
You can still get Stadia, yeah.
I haven't heard news on that in months.
Can't get it here.
Yeah, I do see the future of it with COVID and all that, and I can understand where they're coming from. And what I'm saying is, with all this research data, why is PS now doing nothing? Like, why are they?
When have you
amazing...
used cloud gaming?
In what's what that?
Scenario have you used cloud gaming?
No, but I'm saying PS Now is this amazing service where you can get, like, you know, you can just stream all these games and you have this huge backlog, but they haven't advertised. I've never seen one bit of advertising PS Now. It's not even available in every country. And clearly from the market research, I know this is one company, but it looks like cloud games are going to become a bigger and bigger staple. I mean, Stadia was obviously not the hugest success, but that's what happens when you have those sort of pioneering companies just going into this space. And now other companies are going to go in that maybe Stadia's paved the way. But, like, you know, Xbox has been done a brilliant job with Games Pass and their cloud gaming service. Why isn't PS Now doing, why isn't PlayStation doing anything? That's what I'm saying. I'd love to have PS Now, you know, but.
But I want PS Now for, like, I don't need PS Now. I would like PS Now for the library, but I don't need it for the cloud. Like, I'm not going to be like on my lunch break being like, you know what I really want to play? Uncharted 4 on my phone.
PlayStation have been very quiet lately, and it makes me think they're planning something big.
I mean, to be honest,
very quiet.
Our internet is terrible for, you know, Australia's internet is pretty bad for any sort of fast streaming.
I don't know, man. They're just, I think they're up to something. I don't know what it is.
I should mention, I am like, I just don't understand the cloud gaming. Like, I'm just like, I know you can do it, but like, do you need to? Like, I know we could invest all this money, but I'm like, is it really worth it?
Is it, it's never going to be as good as in your normal setup.
Yeah, it's not. Like, are you going to get like a new game and you're like going to be that excited that you want to play it on your, you know, even if you have an iPad Pro, you want to play it on your iPad and not just wait to get home and play it on your 65-inch 4K TV? Like, are you really that desperate to play it? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I think, Vikes, are you trying to say, Vike, you don't, so you don't need a console?
I think, well, yeah, I feel like that's the future of cloud gaming where
you
can run off your PC or, you know, that sort of
PUBG system. Mobile does really well in India and those countries.
Oh,
really,
India well. Kills it with PUBG Mobile, man.
Freaking hell, man. Yeah. Millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Next story. Looks like Gearbox is opening a studio in Montreal. So Gearbox, obviously, we know them from Borderlands. They're spending $158 million to open a studio, invest in the province. They're going to build a new studio with 250 people. This would push Gearbox's overall size to 850 staff. Now, they've said that they're going to be working on Borderlands and a new IP, and it looks like this studio is going to be paving the way for that new IP.
That's a bit of a risk.
Yeah, look, it's going to be interesting. Now, they're trying to find a way to balance their teams and their talent and culture, and that's obviously going to be part of this new investment. But it looks like, yeah, they're expanding. They want some new IP. So I think it's probably a good move, you know. Gearbox.
They don't do Bioshock, do they?
No, that's...
No. That's 2K.
Who own Gearbox?
2K don't own Gearbox.
Don't they?
No.
You sure?
They got the publishing rights, I believe.
Maybe the publishing rights.
Yeah, maybe the publishing rights. But, so we're going to see, a new IP from them, maybe. Obviously, we know how well their last new IP went with a game that I will be playing next, I guess, because I lost a bet, didn't I? So,
Godfall. We'll
yeah. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, maybe the it looks like it's Borderlands and a new IP. I think it's pretty. Borderlands is like their they're like gimme, you know, their set one.
Yeah, it's going to make millions. That keeps them going.
That keeps them going.
And that's that game.
That's their sure thing.
Is allowed them to do this IP pretty much.
Yeah, 100%. I think you're seeing a lot of studios doing this dual IP thing. You know, you see Guerrilla working on Horizon and whatever they're working on. You've got Insomniac working on, you know, Ratchet and
Spider-Man.
You've got Sucker Punch working on maybe Ghost and I don't know, whatever. Maybe a rumored Sly Cooper or something. But, you know, you've got a lot of these studios getting bigger and trying to do two IPs at once and roll them out. I like the idea. I like that structure.
And also 2K, they put out the trailer for NBA and that game, man, it pisses me off.
The K stands for casino.
But just even looking at that game, they called it a gameplay trailer. It was just all those cutscenes. There was no gameplay. They called it a gameplay trailer. It was just those, you know, those classic cutscenes. I mean, it looks the same. The game looks, there's nothing different. I don't know a single feature that's different from last year. I mean, it's such a travesty, really. And same with FIFA.
It's definitely something where, like, they clearly know they don't need to, change anything. So, like, why would they?
Yeah.
I wish I could tell these guys just stop buying it.
That's the worst part. But the people who need to hear it, the people who keep buying it, like, are the people who don't listen to this podcast. They're people
exactly.
who... That's one of three games they buy.
If you're going to buy NBA, please message us. I want to see and tell me why.
Yeah.
I want to know why.
Yeah. And like, we want to know, like, is this the first one you've bought in a while? Do you buy it every year?
Yeah. Please do. I hope I don't get a message.
Jerome and Mitch get it every year. So there are people who love it.
Jerome doesn't anymore. But Mitch does.
Mitch does.
Going
back to what Jordan was saying about 2K, they do. They do publish Borderlands. So.
They publish it, yeah.
Yeah.
And Bioshock.
Yeah, they do Bioshock too. They actually do a Bioshock, Borderlands, the Civilization, Mafia, 2K, like XCOM. Like, they do a lot. And obviously you've got Take-Two and they have Rockstar. So
now, that's it for the news. Jordan, do you want to quickly say what you play because I know you got to go?
I'll quickly talk about what I played. So still getting through Judgment, only playing, getting to play like an hour or less a night of that. So still getting through it, still really enjoying it. The story is, it's seriously, it's funny because Yakuza is one of those games where it's like, it's known for being a bit wacky and a bit all out there. But Judgment has like such a serious storyline where like you're doing all this investigating and like, it's all about like politics and like how they work with the Yakuza gangs and then like solving Alzheimer's and then how this, like, it's all very like, I can't really believe what I'm like watching as I'm playing it. But I'm still really enjoying it. Played the Champions Hill beta, the COD Vanguard Champions Hill, or Alpha, sorry, over the weekend with you guys and really enjoyed that. I played on my own first and hated it. And then I played with you guys and I enjoyed it a lot more.
Because we won.
Yeah, because we were winning. And I wasn't getting like staunched. And I think I just was in a bit of a better mindset. And I don't really like playing COD online now on my own.
Yeah, neither. It's with
like,
friends.
I want to play it with our friends. And because I'm like, I... It's so bad. I hate losing. And as soon as I start to lose, I'm like, nah.
It's not fun. Who enjoys losing?
I don't think there is a multiplayer game I like playing. Maybe a fighting game.
Yeah, that. Or maybe, like, I enjoyed playing Fall Guys on my own.
Like, oh, wow. Fair enough. Yeah. I think when you're really into a game, you'll like playing it alone. But
yeah. And, like, I loved Warzone last year, but I never played solos.
I never really played solos. Yeah.
But the Champions Hill beta was really fun. Oh, Alpha, sorry. It was really fun. There's definitely some weapon tuning that needs to go on, but the game looked great. The game felt great.
The bar far out that guy, man.
I like insane. Champions Hill is such an interesting game mode. Like at first I was like, I don't really love 2-on-2 or 3v3. Like, is this really going to be for me? But like, it really is like it's a really unique game mode.
Yeah. It's sort of mixing multiplayer and Warzone, multiplayer and Battle Royale in one. I like that.
You're like starting over again, but
you're yeah.
Which is there a way to make it so it's less luck reliant?
Luck reliant on it, do you think?
Because if like there's a couple of games there where you got the lowest teams every time and that was really helping.
Maybe like a ladder, but I don't know how you skill. Then you need SBMM. And it's like, nah, we're not going there.
Do you just make it so if you're coming first, you're versing the second team? Would that eliminate that?
Then surely you'd rather like let your lives all go down and then like you'd match fix so that you're going to play the worst teams.
Like, I think that means you're going to have less lives and you might risk losing.
Yeah. I don't know. I like the way that it's random.
This comes back to, I just think they want it to be randomized because they want noobs to win.
Yeah, you definitely do. It's better for retention, you know.
Yeah, that's why SBMM is not going anywhere in the normal 6v6 or Warzone stuff.
Yeah, I think it was good. I'm excited. I'm somewhat excited for Call of Duty. Like, it'll be good. I think I've been pretty burnt out on Warzone. Like, I don't think I'll be playing that anymore. And multiplayer, I don't know. Like, we'll see. I'm all about the campaign, so.
Yeah, well, that's interesting you say that. So the one thing I skipped during Gamescom that I was just like, I'm bored of this. Was the Vanguard single player stuff. I was just like, all right, you're blowing stuff up. You look nice. You look pretty. But like, I just don't care. Like, yeah. I don't care about this.
Did you play World War II campaign, Jordan?
Yeah. And I enjoyed it. And I probably will play the campaign, even though I didn't play the Cold War campaign. But I'm just like, yeah. I don't need to, it's a waste of my time.
Yeah.
I was like, this just isn't something I need to see.
Do you know how I always harp on about to Dan, like, if the movie doesn't have a cinematic universe, I'm not going to watch it? I think part of why I love like Modern Warfare and Black Ops is like the legacy and the history of the characters. And don't get me wrong, Vanguard is obviously going on these four historical figures that were actually in the war. But I just want like the epic COD storyline, you know, the craziness, the wackiness, the intertwined world where you see like, you know, in the recent one, we saw Zakayev in Black Ops. And like, that's like linked both Modern Warfare and Black Ops storylines.
Yeah, he was there.
And yeah, Imran Zakayev and Kravchenko and all these people. And I'm like, how cool is that? And yeah, I don't know. So I don't know how keen I am for the World War II campaign.
Do you think they're going to make a game with Modern Warfare and Black Ops, like modern Black Ops? Like put the two crews Black together? Black Warfare
Ops.
Because that would sell well, man.
That would. And I thought it would be cool if like Captain Price was in this game, Vanguard. Because not Captain Price from here, but in Call of Duty 2, Yeah. Captain Price is in there. He's like grandfather. Yeah. I'm like, that'd be cool. Right. If like, and then they're linked at all. Yeah. And
hey,
cool,
they still might. They still might.
I mean, clearly they're going this historical route where these four inspired real life characters. Captain Price
just rocks up in this game, man. That'd be so ridiculous.
But yeah, I mean, for me, like Modern Warfare 2019, like I am so hyped for that next story because of the ending when they're going to make Task Force 141. You're going to see Ghost, Soap, like Gaz, like all these. And I love the history of these characters. Like I love the campaign. I love it, love it, love it. And Black Ops campaign was good, you know. So, I mean, I'll just talk about that in a bit with what we've been playing. Yeah. But
I'll go now, guys.
Yeah,
so
Jordan.
Enjoy. Be safe, everyone. I'll talk to you guys later.
Before you do, Vike, we've got breaking news here. Bad Boys Mike Lowry joins Fortnite.
The top comment is, everyone who plays Fortnite is probably not old enough to have seen Bad Boys. Do you know what it is? Like, why is Mike Lowry?
They're literally just picking people from different movies now. It's ridiculous.
They're just going for it. And they have the clout to do that. It's so funny.
But they're actually going to have every IP in this game by the end of it.
I'll be surprised if we see like Solid Snake. I wouldn't be surprised. We just see all these people. Oh,
they're literally trying to put everyone in it. I think that's the plan.
That is.
It's crazy. Anyway.
Black Ops
campaign, you played it. Cold War.
Yeah,
now, played it. I was it always a big fan.
Yeah.
I told you to play it. I said you'd enjoy it.
I finished it. I loved it. Yeah, really good. And I was always keen. Don't get me wrong. I was always keen. Yeah, I really...
You were.
You know, I love Woods. I love Mason. I love those characters. I like that they've gone, hey, Black Ops 1, that's canon, and we're going to build off that because that was clearly the best campaign and still one of the best campaigns in Call of Duty history, like the numbers, Reznov, like Hudson, all them. And Black Ops 2 just went a bit of a different way. It was still good. People loved Menendez. And then Black Ops 3 and 4 just went, well, Black Ops 4 didn't have a campaign. So I like that they're like, we're just going to go off this story. Sort of like Modern Warfare.
Black Ops 3 was terrible campaign.
Yeah, it was. Mm. And it's sort of like Modern Warfare where they're like, look, we know Modern Warfare 1 and 2 happened, but we're sort of going to reboot and bring all the best parts of it in. Cold War sort of done the same thing. We're bringing the best parts of it in, which was just Black Ops 1 and World at War. And then we're going to go from there. And I really liked Adler. I really liked him as a character. He was the most 80s looking guy I've ever seen. Yeah. And
he looks like Brad Pitt in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Have you seen that? Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. And they've already gone for that look.
Yeah.
What I liked about this is, you know, the campaign, like in Modern Warfare, which I still think is one of my favorite campaigns ever, the 2019, like the mission, I think it's Cleaning House or whatever, is by far one of the best missions of single player shooter I've ever played in, period.
But that was the first game that they started introducing choices.
Yeah.
Well, not the first game, but really choices.
That sandboxy type mission. Yeah. I liked that. Like that mission of Clean House where like the immersion, the realism, like that was so cool. Like the video game realism, but I loved it. And that element was so cool. But
like if you remember the butcher from Modern Warfare, you could interrogate him and you could go really far and that sort of stuff.
Yeah. And you know, Call of Duty Modern Warfare has always been quite linear in their gameplay. It wasn't as set, except for that mission, it was quite linear, right? Mm. But Black Ops, it was very different, you know. It was like especially that mission where you're the Russian general and you're just in the embassy and you have like it's almost like a Hitman level. Where you have to like stealth your way and find like different tasks and hack computers. It was pretty much Hitman. It was just a level of Hitman in the game. And I loved that. Yeah, I loved that mission so much.
You didn't have to shoot at all.
I just loved the level design of the campaign. So I think Black Ops and Modern Warfare series have amazing campaigns that are different, but amazing in their own right. And I love them both. But I really loved Black Ops campaign. I recommend anyone to play it. Decrypting the Evidence, which... people would say it's slow and annoying. I loved it. I actually took time. It was pretty difficult, some of them. Like, I loved trying to figure it out myself, and I had this sense of success when I, like, decrypted it without any guides, and it was a good feeling.
It was a really varied campaign. Every mission was different.
Every mission
was very different.
Yeah. One of them, you know, you were in the helicopter in Vietnam. The other one, you were, you know, in the urban setting or urban area. One, you were obviously like this one here where you're in the Russian
embassy. Opening mission, you're chasing after that guy.
Yeah.
And then you interrogate him. You can throw him off or you can keep him.
Yeah.
You don't have to throw him off.
Even like,
you can keep him.
Yeah.
take him away for more questioning. What did you do? Did you throw him or did you keep him?
Yeah, I kept him, mate. I'm a good boy. Got to keep him, mate. Interrogate him. He's got valuable.
Even there's multiple endings. And save Park and Lazar like that. Yeah, there's and the characters are all good. They were fleshed out through those. One thing they did new was this base of operations that you went to every now and again. And
it's like a hub world after each mission.
Little hub world, and you'd go around talking to everyone, you learn a bit more about them. Lazar and that's where loved you can like eat.
Yeah. Remember that? And that's where you can like decrypt evidence and find secrets. And decrypting evidence was necessary for the side missions in order to do them correctly and properly. And yeah, I just liked it. I really liked the story. I loved the 80s. Like it was good. It was good fun. Gunplay was great.
Hudson always varied it. Again.
Yeah, Hudson.
That's the third different actor for Hudson.
Yeah,
it was Michael Keaton. Who was the other one? Michael Keaton. And someone, what was his name, Vikarth? Michael Keaton and big name actor. Like, come on. Have you got it there?
I'm trying to look it up, but I'm trying to
see. Black Ops 1 or Black Ops 2. So I know Michael Keaton was one, but I just want to know the other voice actor.
Dude, if you think about the voice actors in Black Ops 1, it was impressive.
It was stacked.
You had like Ice Cube, Sam Worthington. You had some pretty big names.
Ed Harris. So he's in Westworld, if you've seen that.
Yeah.
He's the older guy in Westworld. So he was the original Hudson, and they got Michael Keaton, and now they've got Pierre Michael, who's if you remember the trailer for Outer Worlds 2, he did that voice.
That was a great trailer.
Yeah, that great. Yeah, he's the voice of that. So he does a lot of work. But I know, fantastic. And it didn't overstay its welcome.
Did not overstay. I thought it was be on the shorter side. I actually like maybe it's a good thing because like I just loved it so much. I wanted more. But
the Red Door mission, that was another varied one.
Again, yeah, that was
a lot
good.
Of these missions you've never seen in COD before.
Yeah.
Which is a hard thing to do when there's been how many campaigns? 14.
Yeah.
You know?
So I just think the last two campaigns have been phenomenal. And those are the things I'm looking forward to the most in Call of Duty, which I never thought I'd say.
Vanguard, I'm looking forward to the campaign most in Vanguard.
Yeah, yeah.
Out of the three
I'm excited for it. Like I know people are like, oh yeah, multiplayer's where the money's at, but I just think campaigns are great. And I know that there's probably no financially not much of a reason to keep them, but I really want them to keep it and I love it. But
I'd love to know the stats, how many played Cold War's campaign and beat it.
I'd definitely give it a solid 8. 8 out of 10. Modern Warfare, I'd give a 9 for the campaign, but this is definitely solid, very good campaign.
Can I ask you, what's your favorite COD of all time in terms of campaign?
Probably Modern Warfare 2.
Yeah.
Or Modern Warfare 1.
See, I think Modern Warfare 2 wins on both sides, multi and campaign.
Yeah, it does. It does. It was just a noob tubing and quickscoping intervention. Yeah, Commander
Black Ops might be second. Yeah,
I think Black Ops would be a close second because I am victorious. Like it was just so
good. Yeah.
But also played Ghost, continuing with Ghost of Tsushima, the Iki Island expansion. Really good, a lot of fun. The enemies are quite varied and upping the difficulty. Oh, the difficulty being
a lot harder, isn't it?
Yeah, the enemies are harder. They have these big enemies that like have this like spear attack. They have a double dual blade that makes it hard to parry, unparryable.
Is it just harder because we're like rusty?
Worse. I thought that, but then the enemies are different too. Some of them have different weapons. There's a new enemy type that like buffs everyone. And also enemies now, they switch weapons mid-fight. So they'll have a sword and shield and then they'll put it away and get out a spear. So you'd either have to change stance or like act differently with the parries because now the spears are really unblockable and... It's I really like the game. It's really good, and I can't wait for the Legends content. I guess I'm one of the few that just love the Legends content, and going to be doing the raid with Dan Allen Gaming.
So we're going to do the raid and It Takes Two this weekend.
You betcha, mate. It's going to be a good weekend.
Do you reckon I'll be all right for this raid? I don't know if my skill levels.
I think we can do one chapter of the raid. Like
okay,
you know, we can do
one chapter a week every weekend, sort of.
Yeah,
thing.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because it's going to take hours. Remember, it's like 4 hours.
You're right.
It's
you get a bit burnt out doing them all back to back.
Yeah, it's hard. It's very hard.
Yeah.
But I'm looking forward to it. And yeah, there's going to be a lot of rust you got to wipe off, man. Like it's.
Oh, I think man. We just might jump into a couple of multiplayer
yeah. sort
of maps and just fill it out.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Also played a bit of Mass Effect, I believe. So keen for that. Really loving Mass Effect 2. Like I just forgot how good it was. Such a phenomenal game. So yeah, how about you? What are you playing, Dan? Obviously Far Cry 6, which you talked about.
Yeah, I'm playing. I haven't played it yet, but I'm going to be playing an early version of Dark Pictures
Anthology.
House of Ashes.
Yeah.
The third one in the series from the Until Dawn guys.
Mm.
So I'm only one of, I think, not many in the world to play it. So that'll be a bit of fun.
Do you agree? This is a bit of a contentious and probably a mean thing to say.
Yeah.
But do you think Supermassive are a bit of a one-hit wonder?
Well, they are in terms of sales. The other two didn't get close. They're using the same engine and it's similar storytelling. Mm. So and I think they're churning the games out quite easily, quickly, and getting a decent buck back for it. And they're not. None of them are bad games. None of them are bad games. They're just not amazing. You know what I mean?
I'll tell you what. I really liked Hidden Agenda. Remember that one with the phone? And it had
them? I loved that too, but I don't know if that was them.
It was. Yeah, it was them. It was them. Okay. Yeah, Supermassive. Had Katie Cassidy, who we all know from Arrow, as Laurel Lance. But yeah, it was good fun.
That's right.
Yeah.
Cassidy. That was random to see her in there. Yeah.
It was. Yeah. Well, she's a bit of a gamer.
You know what's funny? Rami Malek in Until Dawn.
Yeah. Yeah. Rami Oscar Malek. Winner. Yeah. He's been in a few like animated stuff, so he's around.
Yeah. And we played Vanguard, as we said. We smashed that out. I think I ended up winning 25 games in one day. So I played a fair bit of that.
Mm.
I liked it. I liked it. It's for an alpha. Remember, it's an alpha, so I gotta be easy on it. But again, yeah. Viewers out there, Call of Duty. I know some of you just don't care, so I understand. You can get burnt out. And I'm wondering, I did get an email about Halo Infinite. Getting a version of that, the flight. So I'll be hopping into that.
Oh, nice.
The next beta. So I'll be playing that. Hopefully it's against humans because the other one was bots, I think. And then I heard Battlefield are doing a beta soon. So beta's it's all happening.
Out left, right, and center.
And we got Deathloop and we got Kena shortly after as well.
So excited for Kena.
And then Far Cry 6, a couple of weeks later. I mean, it's starting to pick up.
Mm.
And before you know it, Battlefield, COD, Halo, Dying Light, all these games are going to be out. So one game I did play just quickly was a game called Tormented Souls, which I beat. It was a complete ripoff of Resident Evil 1. It's an indie game, horror title, exact same gameplay as Resident Evil 1, right? And for a little indie game, it was a lot of fun, man. It's not easy. Like, it's one of the hardest games in terms of puzzles I've ever played. I don't think anyone is going to get through this game without a guide.
Mm.
I struggled, man. Like, some of these puzzles were insane. I don't know how, like, I had to get some help for a couple of them from another guy who was playing. Because I just, like, it's just, they went really hard. On the puzzles. But yeah, no, nice little indie game there. Hopefully they do well out of it because it's, I know it's a small team. So, and I'm a, you know, I play all the Resident Evil, so I had to check it out.
Mm.
But besides that, yeah, a bit of Far Cry and a bit of Riders Republic. And then hopefully get my hands on Deathloop soon.
That'd be good. I can't wait for Deathloop.
Yeah. All right, Vike, it's been a pleasure.
It has.
As always. It's a long one today. How long? Nearly 2 hours, I think.
Mm.
Getting up there.
Yeah, I think maybe an hour and a half. Oh, 2 hours, yeah.
Yeah, wow. Beautiful.
A lot of content.
Where can the listeners find us, Vike?
They can find us on Stadia and nothing else. Now, you can obviously find us on Spotify, Apple Music, or Apple Podcasts, I should say. And all your other pipes that your social pipes. Yeah.
There's like 30.
Mainly Spotify, Apple.
I mean, I don't know if I'm on SoundCloud. Spotify, Apple. What's the other major player?
No idea.
Google Podcasts.
That's it. Google Podcasts. That's the one. So you can find us on all those good things. Just look up PS5 Central Podcast. You can even just Google it and we'll probably be the first thing that ever comes up. So you can alternatively Google greatest podcast of all time and we will also come up. So
on Stitcher, Amazon Music, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Pocket Casts, Deezer, Overcast. Like there's a lot. All right. Thanks as always, guys. We'll see you
next week.
No, not later. Next week.
Later.
Next week.
Later. Doesn't make the game too soft.